meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
And good evening, everyone. You are listening to Scared Monkeys Radio, whether you're picking us up on satellite, on the internet, on the podcast, wherever you can find us. It's always nice to have you. In May 2005, Beth Holloway received the worst phone call a parent can imagine. Her beautiful daughter, Natalie, had disappeared without a trace in Aruba during her high school senior class trip. 2.5 years later, there are still no answers. There are still lots of questions. And now, Beth has come out with a wonderful book called Loving Natalie, A Mother's Testament of Hope and Faith. And I get a real kick of having Beth Holloway on the show with us tonight. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing? I imagine you've been very busy. I think you're in Portland, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I've been busy, but it's been really good and just, you know, I feel positive about the mission ahead. So all is good.
Well, welcome back to the show. And, you know, I was hoping right from the get-go, the very early interviews that I did with your family and other people involved in the case, that answers would have come forward by now. But here we are 2.5 years later. Your book, Loving Natalie, is out, and we'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. And the book is not only a testament to your love for your daughter, but it's also a guide to help other parents who may be going through something similar or to prevent something from happening as tragic as this. What brought you, first of all, to the title? It seems to be a no-brainer for me. You always love your child, and Loving Natalie sounds like the perfect pick.
Well, I totally agree. And I think I have to go back on something you even said just to begin with. You know, I never imagined that over 2 years later that I wouldn't have an answer. I don't think that I could have accepted being at this point, even 6 months into Natalie's disappearance. I was just so certain that the answer was coming, and I wouldn't even tolerate, you know, it not having, you know, an answer or recovery of her body, something. But, you know, time is very healing, and as time has transpired, I have come to have to, you know, you have to accept that, you know, sometimes, you know, the answers may not come as we'd like for them to, and especially in this lifetime. But I, you know, first must say the message of hope is very powerful. And I think as far as, you know, my direction now is I still believe I'll get answers, but I realize it may not be in this lifetime. And I think that when we look back on everything that's transpired, Loving Natalie was just, you know, an appropriate fit for the story. And, you know, from there, you know, I think that we've learned a lot of painful lessons, and, you know, with everything surrounding Natalie's disappearance, and I felt that, you know, I feel that I want to share, and I want to give other parents the benefit of what I've learned. And, you know, everyone would want justice for their child or answers for their child, and no parent should have to endure what we experienced. And I hope in some way the words that are written in my book will help other people.
I hate the term closure. But it's one that you have to talk about now and then. I know you've made a recent trip to Aruba with Greta Van Susteren. And again, the hypocrisy and the corruption that is rampant there is still there. When you look at now 2.5 years later and some acceptance and how difficult that must be for your family, how hopeful are you? I know you just said the term in my lifetime, but how hopeful are you that you'll be able to bring Natalie home? I think that's a good first step.
I don't really think about that too much anymore as far as recovery of Natalie. I think right now we're just trying to focus on, you know, whether or not the Aruban court system, whether Natalie's case will be moved to the Aruban court system or not. I think everyone probably knows the outcome. There are hopes that charges will be filed, but more realistically, you know, they'll probably be dismissed as suspects. And I think the main thing that we still remain hopeful for, that at least something unexpectedly would happen, meaning just information, just answers as to what happened that night. Someone would come forward, because I feel as if too many people have knowledge of what transpired. There was just too much of a tangled web of suspects that were being, brought into the forefront. I can't imagine. I just still can't. It's hard for me to believe that something still won't break.
You are a meticulous keeper of notes, I'm told, and I'm sure that you never, ever wanted to have to write notes or keep diaries the way that you've been keeping them. But comparing what you've done there and what's in the book, I'm assuming there's lots that you could have put in the book that you just weren't able to. Could you maybe share a couple of those snippets with us?
Oh, wow. Sonny Tillman, of course, my ghostwriter, and I began working on this project. That was something that was very, very hard for her, because we knew there was it was just such a sadness of all the loss of things that could not go in the book. And she also just kept just unbelievable notes from day one. I mean, just incredible, everything that the two of us had together. And we just look back on things that, we couldn't put in there. And, goodness, so much evidence. There was a lot of things regarding different pieces of evidence that would be collected. It would be conveyed to us at different times during the investigation. To pinpoint them, I really can't right now. There were just a lot of interesting and odd to me, or bizarre scenarios where I had a man from Venezuela come in and do a tarot card reading in my hotel room at the Wyndham Hotel. I think it just says I was so desperate. I could have done anything. And, I think back on that, and I just had him come in my hotel room. I didn't have any reservations or hesitations whatsoever.
Right.
And, sat through a two-hour tarot card reading. And that would, when I look back on it, I think, I can't believe I did that. But it's just so bizarre, the things that were happening, and that, everyone was willing to do at that time. And, to get into details, maybe that would be the second thing. Sonny, my ghostwriter, always said that needs to be the second book, is the evidence. So who knows?
Exactly. One of the things that, and I have described you before, Beth, and your husband, Dave, and all involved, including all the scared monkeys and everyone that has tried to help through this whole process and this whole nightmare for your family, is terribly courageous and terribly brave. But the highs and lows that you went through, and you cover them in your book, must have been incredible. How did you keep your sanity? Most would say they would have run off, but you're there to find your daughter, and I suppose when you get pumped up thinking that something will maybe break, and then to be slapped down again because it didn't, must have been terribly difficult. Let's talk about that and how you cover that in the book.
Well, I think you picked up on it, because that was one thread that we really wanted to make clear. It was, if you'll notice as you read the book, every down was followed by an up. And when we were laying it out, we know clearly which ones they were. So, as I said, it just showed that every time, hope defeats hopelessness. And like I said, every down was followed by an up. And what I chose to embrace as hope, was it's unique for me. Hope is unique for each person, depending on, the challenges that they're facing. There are many people that are facing seemingly insurmountable problems in their lives. And, I think of, even there's, wonderful Scared Monkeys supporters, that there's PETA and Peaches, the challenges that they're facing in their life. And I think they will see the same thing. You have downs, but then, usually they're followed by an up, just something to encourage you and to keep you moving forward through the journey. And whether for me that was, a call from an individual in the United States that wanted to come, step forward and help in any way, as far as from reward money to just, remarkable prayers and that people were sending me. I just was just fortunate, and I was able to embrace, each sign of hope that was placed before me. And so, but there certainly were a lot of ups and downs.
Names like Art Wood, Jossie Mansour, Jamie Skeeters, your ex-husband Dave, many, many others who I've spoken to and interviewed on my program, and all the volunteers that came to help with the searches and the roadblocks that you ran into. You must be somewhat amazed that still after all this time, there's a very strong backing of you, of your family, and of the cause to get the right answers for you. Let's talk about that a little bit. And why are people still so interested in your case?
Well, I can't really, speak for them, but all I can say is that I'm very grateful for their, dedication. And goodness, some of the things that the supportive bloggers have uncovered are amazing to me. And, I rely heavily on any information that they give me, and I've often said that I wouldn't be a bit surprised if, something was out through, a chat room, through one of the suspects, some information unfolds, and, it would just fall into the hands of someone who has been so dedicated to her case. And that's what I mean by something unexpectedly could happen, and I truly believe that. And, as I said, I'm just grateful for the support. And if I had to guess, maybe why is, Americans, we see injustice, and I think that Americans have expectations of being treated fairly and honestly, and I think that in some way they're just taking a stand that, we're just not accustomed to being treated like that. I mean, when you walk into a police station, you would hope, I think that, every time you go to the United States, you're going to have some dispatcher, a policeman, someone in an official capacity could assist you. I mean, I think that it's just hard for to comprehend the attitude, the lack of urgency in response to an American in a crisis, outside of our borders. I think that is probably the most prevalent thing that's on our minds. It's just watching the injustice in front of us. It's right in front of us, and that's all we can do.
Beth Holloway is with me this evening, author of the new book, Loving Natalie. Of course, you can find that at Amazon, or just go to scaredmonkeys.com and click on the link there. Let's talk about Natalie. We've talked about the case and the suspects and all of the, I can use several words from corruption to incompetence to whatever, but let's talk about Natalie, the young girl growing up. There's a lot of potential and a lot of greatness, and I will use that term because I think that it's safe to say that we can judge this young lady from her childhood, that she would have done great for herself and for everyone else. Let's talk about her growing up and what she was like as a young child to her teens.
Well, I think that Natalie becomes alive, and people can hear her voice when they read her journal entries or her poems. I think that they're hearing Natalie's voice, and I think what they are reading, especially from some of her journal entries, is a young lady who had, gosh, such a deep philosophy on life, love, and emotions. And when she did one of her journal entries on the three most influential persons in history, of course, one of them was Jesus Christ. So mm-hmm. I think that shows that the young lady who had a very deep faith, and she had a secure relationship with God. And when I think about her, my goodness, the journal entry of the definition of a hero. Well, I mean, I think she's just thanking all the persons who have worked so hard and tirelessly and helping. And my goodness, the one on, if I had any superhuman power, what would it be? And it would be the ability to predict the future. And that's all about the choices, and the choices that we make affect the rest of our lives. And, when I read that one, though, it saddens me greatly because it's where Natalie's predicting her life. And, but I just think it shows, as I said, a young lady with a very deep
maturity, well beyond her years, I believe. A very strong maturity in words and emotions. And it must be difficult for you, Beth, when you found the diaries, the journals, whatever you want to call them, to sit down and put them in the book. Let's talk about that a little bit. Some of these had you not seen before?
Oh, no, I had not seen them before. And I don't think say that they were as difficult as to say they were. I took a lot of course, they're hard, and that it's some of them are, gosh, very sad. when I have to see of all the plans she had and everything, but you've got to know I'd also take great comfort in finding them in some of the things that she wrote. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. We always feel we know our children, and we do on a certain level, but I don't think that I knew Natalie to the depth that I do now. As I said, I try to look at them as more a source of comfort in knowing how secure and, what a special young lady she was, and just try to take some comfort in that.
Are you okay to take a few questions from some of the monkeys here in our last 10 minutes, Beth?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, here's one. Says there are many stories in Beth's book about kind-hearted Arubans who helped her and prayer services that were held daily during her stay on the island. Is there anyone in Aruba who she got close to and kept touch with?
Well, actually, there is one, and she would probably want to be anonymous. She's a reporter.
Okay.
And, I think it was pretty clear that we were all together in the beginning in June, and I think it's clear in the book that the tide turned when the two of the Calfo brothers were dismissed in July. I think that was when the tide turned as far as the support for the family. But there is one that I have felt a little more connected to. She's a young mother, and it's nice. I know I'll hear from her if anything is even close to real as far as happening in Natalie's case. But other than that, no, not really. No one else.
Okay. Again, there's a lot of repeats here as far as the questions go, but some of the questions deal with in names that we've all heard of the Kelpo brothers and Joran van der Sloot, etc. Are there any names that have come up as far as the investigation goes that may or may not have been kept quiet that the public would be quite surprised at hearing right now? And if you're not able to say the names, that's fine.
I think right now, Scared Supporters, I think they've got a pretty good handle on everyone that's been involved in Natalie's case. So I don't think there's any names that I could give that would surprise them at all. I think they have, they've been so dedicated to her case, it's just been absolutely phenomenal.
We we heard about the FBI being involved as observers. The term has been used several times. Some media outlets have come forward with suppositions that they've heard from sources that the FBI have came to conclusions as far as what happened to Natalie. There was a DEA agent on the island at the time when you first got there. Can you talk a little bit about the FBI's involvement and the DEA's involvement? Have they done enough, or could they have done more to help with this investigation?
Well, I really tried to make it clear in the book that the FBI, they would have done anything that they were asked to do. That's the key. We know our current limitations. They were not asked to do. We have valuable resources in the United States. And that's been the most frustrating aspect of Natalie's case is, for a country to not allow our valuable resources to be used on a victim's behalf. So I would have to stick by that. I met with the FBI every day, and I know that they would have done anything. That's when you have a country who chooses to remain, keeps the investigation close to vest and, they did not pass the ball one time. So I just feel as if that is just a fact. That's our current limitations, and that's what is in place for victims that find themselves in a crime outside of our borders.
There's a follow-up question here, Beth. It says, do you feel that you received good support from the politicians in Alabama? Could they have done more? Would it help to write or email them to remind them that there has been no resolution in the case? Is there anything we can do in this regard or that they can do to help bring this to a resolution?
Oh, gosh. Goodness. And I think they did too. They knew. they knew early on. I think that's why the calls were coming in from the senators and congressmen as early as they were into Natalie's disappearance. You know, these businessmen, and they knew what we were up against. And, you know, I was just somewhat naive, of course. I'm very, very naive, and just having thinking American and having those expectations that, you know, I was going to have fair and honest and competent investigation. I know that there was going to be, you know, collusion going on two steps ahead of me the entire time. I had no idea. I couldn't even fathom thinking that thought process. So to answer your question, I think they also in turn have just really tried to do and put the pressure on the right places. But when you've got a sovereign country, there is nothing you can do but take a stand.
Absolutely. And one of the comments here from a listener says, don't ever relent, Beth. We never will. And I think that that speaks for many of us here, including myself. Another question, Beth Holloway. It says, will the book come out in Holland as well? And will it be in Dutch? Have your publishers told you that?
No, but those are great questions. I need to follow up on those and get back to you. I don't know. From what I understand, it will be available in several countries. As far as what language, no, I do not know that. But I will certainly, you know, follow up on that and see what the possibilities are.
Here's a comment from one of the Scared Monkeys who was at your book signing in Chicago. It says, after I left, I realized I wanted to ask her if she had an opportunity at any time to see any timeline, I'm sorry, for Paulus the night that Natalie was missing. How was she able to be so calm when you met with Anita and Paulus? And I think you and Greta covered that somewhat. I was amazed, too. You were very calm, but I think you were also focused on a goal, and it wasn't to overreact. You were hoping those people could give you some answers.
Well, I really was. I was just, yeah, it's just called desperation. That's the bottom line. And when a parent is desperate, they will do anything they could possibly do. And I felt it's best for me to just listen rather than do most of the talking, because I just feel as if, you know, I just want people to talk. Just let them talk. See if you can pick up anything. And I just kept thinking that, you know, once Anita had vented as long as she could, I was so hopeful that Paulus would begin to talk. And, of course, you know, that didn't happen. You know, he couldn't even answer a simple question. So I was just desperate at just seeing if they would begin to talk and just gain one single thread. Just one thread is all I wanted.
I know you speak about it and cover it in your book, but I would be remiss without asking you right now. Hypothetically, John and Mary Smith are planning on sending their son to the Bahamas for a school vacation trip next week. And they just tell him, go and have fun. We'll see you when you get back. There's a lot more to it than that. What would your advice be to John and Mary Smith?
Well, my first advice would be that Natalie's story, my book, should be used as a prime opportunity for John and Mary Smith to open up conversations with their young son about things they might not have discussed with him in a long while. And that's everything from faith to personal safety. And secondly, log on to safetravelsfoundation.org. There's a lot of information there that can be very valuable for parents and travelers of all ages. And just make sure that you have done your research as far as the country you're visiting. You know, go over different things, home safety, knowing your rights, developing and utilizing safety plans. And you know, just under phone safety, you have to look at all the things you want to prepare your traveler for. You know, not just to have international calling, but make sure your traveler knows how to use the international calling when he's out of the country. And make sure that you've gotten your key contacts entered into your cell phone, whether that's your 911 equivalent, whether that's, a police precinct, except in Aruba, you know, might not get someone at NORD.
Exactly.
But, you know, get somebody, you know, get your police precinct numbers, your pertinent numbers, your embassy contacts, and you know, making sure your traveler has proper conversion equipment, securing a medical evacuation plan. There are a lot of things that you can do that are pretty low cost on the front end. You would not want to find yourself, as we are, just reactive on the on the end. And there's just so many things that parents can begin to do before their traveler leaves on an international destination.
That's great advice. And the book, again, is Loving Natalie, available at Amazon, or go to Scared Monkeys and just click on the link there. Beth Holloway, I know you have to run and do another interview. Thank you. We all hope and pray that your family will get the answers you deserve soon.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That's Beth Holloway, author of Loving Natalie. We'll be back in a minute with LaDonna Meredith from Let's Bring Them Home, and we'll be doing our second in a series of interviews about human trafficking. Stay tuned to this case. It's about a Canadian girl that's missing out of Las Vegas. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
We're back with more of the Dana Pritzer Show on ScaredMonkeysRadio.com.
Yeah, we are back. Following up on a segment that we did a couple of weeks back about human trafficking, LaDonna Meredith is here from Let's Bring Them Home, and we're going to talk about a Canadian girl by the name of Jessie Foster, who is missing out of Las Vegas, I believe, and is believed to be part of this human trafficking victim tragedies that we don't hear a lot about in the press, but we're covering here on the Dana Pritzer Show. Hi, LaDonna.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm glad to be on the show tonight. Thank you.
Nice to have you back. And we're going to continue on doing as many segments as we can about this. But let's talk about Jessie Foster. She's a Canadian girl missing from Las Vegas.
She is. Basically, we don't know what happened to Jessie Foster between March 28th and April 3rd, 2006. So she's been reported missing. On March 27th, Jessie left a voicemail message for her stepmother, and on March 28th, she spoke to her sister on the phone, and that's the last time her family had ever heard from her.
Now, her case is being investigated by ATLAS, the Anti-Trafficking League Against Trafficking, which is a task force that includes agents from the FBI, ICE, Transportation Security Administration, the Department of Labor, U.S. Marshals, U.S. Attorney, General's Department, Henderson PD, Las Vegas Metro PD, Clark County Attorney, District Attorneys, etc., etc. It's a very high-powered group. Lots of people working on this. How come we haven't heard much about it?
Well, I think we've touched on this before in other shows. Dana, the problem is that this is not a problem that the public in general wants to embrace and to admit that it's happening. And I think that we're not hearing a lot of it because Jessie was involved in prostitution. She had moved to the United States and was living with her boyfriend, Peter Todd, who lived in a $500,000 home, but has no job, so to speak of. So, you know, people shy away from that because there's prostitution and crime involved. And it's something that I think, as a society, we just shun the idea that these things happen, but they do, and people like Jessie go missing, and I think she's very well a victim of human trafficking.
Now, she's a human being just the same as we all are. She may have lived and maybe still living a life of ill repute, I can use that term, but the human trafficking aspect is the scary part of this. Again, for those that are just tuning in, maybe we should go over a little bit about human trafficking and talk about some of the statistics.
You know, basically human trafficking, and we've touched on this before, I mean, it's you're being forced into slavery, whether it's for work, whether it's the sex trade. It can be a variety of different things. The statistics are alarming. We know that there are statistics showing that there are over 600,000 people that are involved in human trafficking, and that's anywhere from small children all the way up to elderly. You know, not all of those involve sex trade. A good portion of it does. And then you look at third world countries that involve human trafficking so they can make product. They put them in sweatshops, slave labor. So it's a huge problem, and I think that shows like this are going to help bring attention to it and light to it so people will take it more seriously.
There is a web page also for those of you that are interested more about Jessie Foster is www.jessie, which is J-E-S-S-I-E Foster, F-O-S-T-E-R, .ca, www.jessiefoster.ca. What have we learned about her case? What has the investigation turned up?
Well, many different things. One, we know for certain that Jesse Foster was convicted in Las Vegas of soliciting prostitution in June of 2005. So we know that she was involved in some fairly unsavory characters. You know, beyond that, we know that she had a close relationship with her family. She kept in touch with them, and then just one day she disappeared. She had a very hostile relationship with Peter Todd. We have reason to believe that he's a person of interest in this case. I do believe that he was working as her pimp, which is a very sad thing. She was just in a cycle of abuse that I don't think she knew how to get out of. And, you know, authorities are looking at this case very closely as human trafficking, and that's one of the things that sort of propelled me. Jesse's case has propelled me to look more into human trafficking and to be a voice for those who are voiceless.
Yeah, and exactly. And the families that come forward, I know I'm reading from a letter from her mom to her that's posted on the website, and families obviously care, but they must run into some roadblocks when it comes to public relations, for example. I see that Geraldo covered it, and some of the other, I hate to use the term tabloid shows because any PR is good PR when it comes to missing right. person cases, but some of the tabloid shows that they are also displayed or brought up as, again, not as humans, but as human beings, but as shady characters, because that's what Maury Povich has on his show, dysfunctional people, and maybe the public's not so interested in those types of cases. How do we turn that ideology around?
You know, people ask me that question almost on a weekly basis, and I think it's as simple as this. We make these people's lives real to the general public. You know, they were children they had at one time, and they had hobbies. They loved their families. They had a life. Sometimes they had children of their own. You know, our choices sometimes lead people to judge us, but they don't define who we are. Jesse Foster made some decisions that obviously got her into some trouble, were not the best decisions she had ever made. But ultimately, Jesse was loved by her family. She loved her family, and she was a good girl. And I think if people can understand that, often women get tricked into this type of lifestyle,
exactly.
or any other type of crime-related lifestyle, and then you get into the cycle, and then it's almost impossible to get out. So we need to, as a society, have some compassion and, I think, embrace that these things do happen and do what we can to put a stop to it. And there were so many things, so many factors in Jesse's case. I mean, she was beaten. Medical records show that she had been beaten so badly she had to be hospitalized. So she was just in a terrible situation. Had her family known that, they would have been able to rescue her.
That actually takes me to my next question. Is this the lifestyle a lot of people with their, you know, best interests at heart don't understand? And they may come forward and say, why did they get into this anyway? Were they just trying to make money? They didn't have to. They could have walked away. But there's a lot more to that prostitution angle. Let's cover that a little bit more. It isn't just a financial issue with the pimps, the intimidation, the addictions that lead to having to make money to support your addiction and on all of that. It's not just as simple as they could have walked away.
No, it's not that simple. I mean, of course, it becomes attractive. The lifestyle does, because a lot of these girls are living in $500,000 homes. They are, you know, catering to celebrities, you know, public officials. They feel important. They feel loved. But we also live in a society that glamorizes crime. It glamorizes promiscuity. It makes these lifestyles seem okay. And so, you know, you're getting messages from the media and from society as a whole that, hey, it's okay to be promiscuous. It's okay to, you know, live an adulterous lifestyle when you're married. And so when this opportunity arises, it's often hard for a young person to walk away from the money or the addiction, because they're getting messages from the rest of the world that this is okay. And it's really not. As a society, we have to make a change. And that's where the real change has to happen.
Las Vegas, in this particular case, is the backdrop. They call it Sin City for a very good reason, I believe. That whole aspect of this, the legalization, so to speak, of prostitution, the gambling and all those sort of moralistic issues. Let's cover that a little bit, because you'll have a polarized side, one saying, oh, Vegas is okay, you don't have to do that kind of stuff, and the other side, which would say it's all evil, you just ask for problems by going there, etc., etc.
Well, I think that you have to answer that question, what good comes out of that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, what good comes out of what they call Sin City? Not a lot. Well, there's a lot of crime, there's murder, and it's a gateway for human trafficking. It just is. It's proven time and time and time again. So I think educating young people at a young age on the dangers of these types of things, on the dangers of how you can get sucked into addiction, whether it's gambling or drugs or alcohol or prostitution or any of these things, that's probably going to be key. I don't think we're ever going to be able to change the thinking of those that are already, you know, well invested in the fruits of Las Vegas, so to speak, because there's a lot of money to be had.
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, society, the nation, our world as a whole, we're driven by the almighty dollar. And so if it hurts a few people, well, what's it to us? Because I'm becoming rich. And so we have to change that mindset. And if you can't change that mindset, you know, what hope do these girls like Jessie have that get caught up in it? I mean, I believe Jessie was truly looking for a way to better herself and to stand on her own two feet and not have to do it while she's making minimum wage somewhere. I think she just made some mistakes to possibly, you know, cost her innocence and cost, hopefully not her life, but, you know, fear for the worst.
I love the name of your organization, Let's Bring Them Home. My first guest this evening was Beth Holloway, a big of a high-profile case as you can get as far as her missing person daughter, Natalie. A lot of cases that are covered may get 5 minutes airplay, and then you'll never hear about them again. Whether it's human trafficking or just plain and simple missing, how does your organization try to balance the scale of what's fair as far as getting the people to know? Because without the people knowing about these cases, it's going to be awfully hard to get answers the way that they should.
Yeah, and that's a good question, Dana. You know, we take every one of our cases so personally. We get so attached and so involved. And one of the things that we can't do is we can't take on hundreds of cases at once. But what we can do is we can take on a few cases at a time and put our all into it. That's what my team can do. And what we want to do is make people, society as a whole, see these men and women and children that are missing and sort of relate to them. You know, oh, I that's like my sister, or that's like my brother, or she enjoyed this television show, and make them a real human being. And I think that's first. And then and work passionately as a group to do everything we can so that they are remembered, because 2,300 people statistically go missing every day, and there's just, you don't hear about 2,300 people every day. You hear about the, and I'll say it again, you've probably heard me say it on every show, you know, the blue-eyed, blonde-haired
yep.
little girls. Not that we're picking on them,
no.
But that's the truth. And so we're really trying to fight for the what is the underdog, even though it's really not, because statistics show that very rarely is it the blue-eyed, blonde-haired little girls that go missing. It is minority. It's, you know, young adult men. It's the elderly. It's the adult women like Jessie Foster. So I'm very passionate about it, and Jessie's case in particularly, I think that probably happens more often than not. Girls get lured into this lifestyle, and they simply go missing. And a lot of times, police departments won't even take the report because, you know, they are so callous to that lifestyle of crime and prostitution. To them, it's just one more person that's off the street in their town that they don't have to worry about.
And you're right. And, of course, you know what I do for a living besides doing the show. And the law enforcement response for me would be, no, police officers care about every missing person. But then when I snap out of that answer and look at it realistically, you're right. And that is a huge problem. What can we do to help that? Is this an education issue? Is this there's too many old-timers out there right now and too many young, cocky cops that want to go out and bust heads rather than look for that missing prostitute?
Well, I mean, and in all fairness, you know, we work with law enforcement on a daily basis, and, you know, our relationship with law enforcement all across the nation is a good one. You know, law enforcement has a very difficult job. You know, they see, it's hard to fit in the missing persons cases with working the regular beat, you know, in all fairness. But I think if you can make, it's an education issue, because if law enforcement can understand that that girl who's working as a prostitute is caught up in a lifestyle that she doesn't know how to get out of, and we can make that person real and make the police understand that there are people that love her that possibly didn't understand the lifestyle she was living, didn't know, so they couldn't help her. I think that's the key, and we've found that to be very successful. I mean, it's something as simple as on March 27th, Jesse visited a dentist and she had a wisdom tooth extracted. Okay, how normal is that? Mm-hmm. Everybody can relate to that. I mean, she still cared about her teeth. You know, it's something that simple to show that she was just not continually living in a lifestyle that was drug-induced and she didn't live, you know, have any other life. She did. She was caught up in a lifestyle that I believe she couldn't get out of because she was threatened by bodily harm by Peter Todd. She was in an unfamiliar surrounding, which is just key for what they do with human trafficking, and she couldn't get out.
They talk about human trafficking indicators in the story that I'm reading here. Let's talk about what some of those are.
There's many, and I, you know, some of the ones that I want to touch on, particularly that I think involve Jesse's case, is it's the lure of the lifestyle,
right.
The promise of a lucrative job. I think we touched on that somewhat in the last show. You see that in almost every case. If you can lure that person with promises of wonderful things to come, you know, they're more likely to get involved. They're more likely to compromise their morals or even their good sense. And then the next step is isolation. That's almost immediate. They either take the young women and to, you know, maybe another country, or they keep them isolated within their own house. They do that, you know, through emotional abuse, physical abuse. There's many indicators that can keep somebody isolated, even right under our own noses. And so those are key factors in human trafficking cases. And by the time the girls come to their senses and want to be able to get out, they can't. They're so far entrenched into this lifestyle, they can't get out. They depend on, you know, in Jesse's case, she depended on Peter Todd. He provided for her. He provided a $500,000 home, her food, her groceries, her transportation, the things that she needed. And, you know, it's hard not to be indebted to that person for the good things that they are continuing to do. It helps you sort of explain away the bad things that they're asking you to do. And I think by the time that Jesse was strong enough to get out, that it was too late.
It's a psychological cycle, like you say. Some would say the domestic violence cases, they call it the cycle of violence with the honeymoon stage, et cetera, et cetera. And this is also a psychological, I call it a slave cycle, where they're buying them through all of this and then totally abusing them at the same time. LaDonna, we're going to continue on with these types of segments here in the weeks to come. While I have you here, let's bring them home. Would you like to talk about something that you guys are doing right now?
Yeah, one of the things that we're doing right now that we're very excited about is we have a partnership with Outpost for Hope out of Sacramento, California, and we're working on a project called Kids Off the Grid and the Perception Project. And it's really a way to get society to look at the word lost and to sort of redefine what is lost, who is lost. And as we're going through that process, we want to make society aware of a population that are just off the grid, kids that are missing, kids that are born to drug addicts, prostitutes, and the whatnot, who are unreported missing. They're just under the radar. They're not being cared for, and they're being abused and exploited. And there's more information about that on our website, and that's something that we're working very closely with, along with the human trafficking project that we've got going. And it's exciting, and we really believe it's going to make a difference, and I think it could save lives.
And we'll have you back here in a week or so to do another segment on human trafficking. LaDonna Meredith from Let's Bring Them Home, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, we've got about, 13, 14 minutes left here. I thought I would give you an opportunity to call into the show if you would like to discuss anything that you heard from either one of my guests this evening, LaDonna Meredith or Beth Holloway. And, of course, the book is Loving Natalie. You can find that at Amazon or go to scaredmonkeys.com and just click on the link there to buy the book. It's a great book, and she's a great lady that has a story to tell about her daughter and the living hell nightmare that the family has gone through. I want to comment a little bit about some of the cable news coverage that we've seen lately regarding Rita Cosby, Howard K. Stern. And, yes, there's a civil suit going on, all that kind of stuff. I don't want to get into that and Anna Nicole Smith, but I am a little bit distracted and dismayed at some of the cable news coverage with the character by the name of Lincoln Bain, who is a Bahamas TV show host who has, in my opinion, set up Rita Cosby and brought with him a potpourri, how do you like that term, of audio recordings of conversations that he's had with Rita. Rita has also released some recordings that she's had with him, and it's turned into an ugly mess. But my comment about cable news and some of the shows and their somewhat obsession with this Lincoln Bain makes you sit back and scratch your head, because I've seen terrible contradictions and statements that this individual has had from show to show. I've heard these nannies come on and read rehearsed statements, sidetrack direct questions that are given to them, yet the cable news shows keep using this guy. They keep bringing him on and keep going at and basically character assassinating Rita Cosby. Rita Cosby, in my opinion, needs to just sit back, regroup, and take the advice of her attorneys. And cable news needs to sit back and take a long look at Lincoln Bain. Lincoln Bain with his controversy TV show. And by the way, I invited him to come on the program this evening and have had no response, because I was going to ask him some questions about some of these statements that he's coming forward with, and why now? He's not denying anything that's been said. He's just, it's become a one-person attack on Rita Cosby and her book, Blonde Ambition. And I'm somewhat disappointed in shows like Greta Van Susteren and even Geraldo Rivera, where this so-called panel of experts sit back and let this guy spew on with his inconsistencies. I felt real bad for FBI, retired FBI agent Don Clark, where he was being attacked by this Bain and this attorney from the Bahamas, basically calling him a liar, and he was amazed. And when you're in law enforcement for as long as he has been, and I'm in my 25th year now, you can read language of people. You can sit back and you can hear statements that they make and pretty much glom on to inconsistencies that they've made in other statements. And this Lincoln Bain, his middle name should be Mr. Inconsistent, because it's unbelievable. Anyway, that's my rant about that, and hopefully this will all come out in the wash eventually. But the cable news people need to take a long look at this guy before they keep giving him airtime after airtime after airtime. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Of course, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, pick up podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, etc. On Friday evening, we're going to be doing a special show with Jackie Hollander, and we'll be live from Carbondale, Illinois, where there will be a special march called Take Back the Night. Thousands of rape victims will be taking back the night, and Jackie Hollander will be there as a guest speaker, as a predominant speaker of the evening. And we'll be carrying that live here on Scared Monkeys Radio and having an interview with Jackie and other rape victims, because it is very important for them to have their voices heard. And I believe And so does Jackie Hollander, and her and I discussed this and agreed that when they read out a nominal call of names of those rape victims that are still looking for justice, that Natalie Holloway's name will be one of those names read, because she and I both believe that Natalie Holloway is a victim of rape and has not got the justice she deserves. Hi, you're on the air.
Dana, it's Red. How are you?
How are you, sir? I'm good. I've got the old laryngitis thing going a little bit tonight, but I don't know if you can tell or not, but we're plugging right along.
It's been such a long time. I think the last time I called in, I think you were under the weather then, too.
Yeah. Really? Well, I don't think it has anything to... Well, I'm sure it doesn't have anything to do with you. In fact, I know it doesn't. I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I'm sorry for myself that I was under the weather. So, enough about me. What's up?
Oh, I figured I would... I would call in and... Your last bit about the cable news,
yeah.
At it again.
Is,
I think it almost becomes a broken record if you think about it, and it's almost because of the ratings.
It's a broken scratch record.
Can't really put anything else on it but that.
Yeah,
they'll put anybody on with who wants to talk about one particular topic just because that happens to be what producers think is that hot button topic.
And I go crazy, and maybe it's just me, and maybe I'm picking up on these inconsistencies, and maybe because I have a small part in this whole story, that this guy is just driving me around the bend, because he's I would love to have him as in a interrogation type atmosphere where I'm asking the questions, and that I wanted to get him on the show tonight because he's driving me nuts, and these dopey cable news hosts are just glomming onto him and thinking he's the second coming of investigative reporters, where he's just a I don't know if I can say this, but what the hell, I'm going to say it anyway, he's just an attention whore as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, if you think about it...
Can I say attention on the radio? Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, attention is one of those buzzwords that's no longer allowed.
Yeah, right.
Actually, what's no longer allowed on the news shows anymore is called investigative journalism.
That's true.
That's considered... I think that's one of George Carlin's words now.
Okay.
That they no longer decide to do anything. And I think the irony in it all is... You know, what is the lawsuit all about? But supposed misinformation, things being said that, you know, every lawsuit's going to have, it obviously they have two sides. And in this day and age, you know, the lawyers want to, you know, play it out on the media. I mean, that the court of public opinion is, you know, a very driving force in this day and age. But when you look at what they're doing with the news, it's like you would like to think that maybe, just maybe, someone would step back and say, let's take a look at the person as to where we're actually getting the information from, but that might be too much because, you know, then you can't do the salacious headline, you know, promo and say that, you know, ooh, tape against Rita,
yeah.
Film at 11.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and they just go from there, which is kind of a shame. Mm. But I'd also like to say, and I know it was a long time in coming and getting Beth on, and you know, as advertised, you know, a lot longer period than any kind of interview that she had done on any of the major shows, and thank you for asking the not five normal questions and how she feels.
She's a classy lady, and she's a her strength is unmeasurable. There's the dark side that attacks. There's the paranoid side that comes out with all kinds of weird hyperbole and speculation. And then there's the caring side that just wants to help. And she's able to balance that all three and continue on with her life and get out the message that she's getting out with her book and doing all this PR and all that. And I wished I had half of her strength.
Well, I mean, the thing about Dana is, I mean, she does get a lot of her strength from a lot of the people who support her. And, I mean, I've known Beth for quite some time now. And it is, you know, there's I mean, my God, I could write a book for all of the conversations that we've had that are very personal and private, and I would never because,
right.
I mean, it's just an amazing thing to see someone's will to, you know, not only go on, but to try to help other people in the process. I mean, it's, you know, she's come to the, you know, to the unfortunate conclusion that, you know, obviously Natalie's not coming home, and she just tries to help other people.
Yeah.
And that is a lot different than a lot of people out there who, you know, either get destroyed by their grief or just shut down, or they just don't do anything to help anybody and, you know, just go about their normal lives.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
She's made it her mission to make sure that this unfortunate situation does not happen to another person.
Yep.
And I think that's so commendable. And, you know, when you hear some of the insanity of which what we deal with in the media and on the internet, it really just makes you shake your head.
Yep.
Say, how on earth can anybody be against somebody trying to help other people?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I talked to her a little bit off air before we came on, and she's just such a nice lady, and it just breaks my heart that I can't just reach out or wave my magic wand and get her the answers that she deserves, because damn it, she deserves, and sort of the whole family deserves some answers, and some they've suffered enough, plain and simple.
That's for certain, and it's it would have behooved a certain island in the Caribbean to have gotten Beth and the rest of the family answers. And because they decided not to and decided to actually take a adversarial role in this whole thing, it's probably going to cost them. And, you know, as I've, you know, we've had many conversations about this, that if at some point or another, there has to be a, you know, the clock has to strike 12, and then, you know, Aruba goes on from that point. And with the nonsense that's still going on, with, you know, the book that's now come out, that clock hasn't even come close to starting again.
No.
People, you know, have come up to me and said, you know, I thought that case was over.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, nope.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Not even close.
You know, there's going to come a point in time where, you know, whatever they decide to do with these suspects, you know, that's going to become a news cycle. And if they let them off the hook, that's going to be an even greater news cycle. And it's just going to go on and on. And, you know, they're going to be looking around one day and saying, you know, where are the guests? Where are all the tourists? And no one's going to really care because, you know, they've had their chance. They've had their moment. And to just, you know, bleed a family along, lie to them, and continue to just stonewall the situation. You know, that it may seem like, I don't know how that seems like the right answer, but it's certainly not.
Well, that's, you know, that's exactly true. And, you know, I was glad she was able to come on the program tonight and take some time to answer some questions. And it was so cute. I said to her, well, we'll keep you on for about 25 minutes. She says, that's perfect. I have another interview at 28 after, and I only have to go from the 14th floor to the first floor to do the interview. So I said, are you sure that's enough time for you? Oh, absolutely. You know, 3 minutes to go 14 floors. I can't even get my shoes on in 3 minutes. This lady is,
and I would be sucking wind by the time I got into that next interview.
Absolutely. Anyway, thanks for calling, buddy.
Take it easy, Dana.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Red from Scared Monkeys. 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. If you'd like to call in and get your thoughts in the last couple of minutes of the show. You know, I didn't want to rant on too much about cable news, but this whole Lincoln Bain character and the attack on, especially on, you know, Rita Cosby and Don Clark, former FBI agent, former FBI supervisor, 25 years in law enforcement, impeccable credentials, and they bring on this character, Bain, and he's able to just squawk away with his rhetoric, his inconsistencies, and his misnomers. I'm tired of it. I know I may not be that big of a voice, but I will stand up for anyone who I think is being smeared and attacked in the media. And shame on cable news for doing this and stepping forward and going after these people without the kind of support that they should be getting. I'm going to take a quick break here and come back in a minute and finish up the show or take a couple of more calls from you. But this is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be back in just a minute.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Yeah, that's right. I want to thank Beth Holloway and Donna Meredith and Red for coming on the show tonight. And remember, we'll be back Friday night. I'm not sure the time yet. I haven't been told the time yet. We're going to do the special live show from Carbondale, Illinois, with Jackie Hollander in the Take Back the Night March. If we can't help victims of rape, I don't know who we can help. So we're going to be live, and stay tuned to Scared Monkeys Radio for that. I want to do a program also with, I talked about a little bit earlier, Don Clark, the retired FBI agent supervisor, and address some of this nonsense that's being thrown his way. Because if he, the cops stick together, yeah, I think we do a little bit. And I could see it in his face. Or hear it in his voice, because I actually listened to the interview, that he was having enough of this Lincoln Bain and the cable news smear campaign against him. So we're going to try and do that. And we've got some other things that hopefully we can figure out here in the next couple of weeks for Scared Monkeys Radio that I'm sure you will enjoy. Again, thank you, and we'll see you again real soon. Don't forget, scaredmonkeysradio.com is the webpage, and you can pick up the podcast of this show, any other shows, or our daily commentaries there. Send me a note to dana@scaredmonkeys.com. Whatever you like, it's always nice to hear from you. Thanks a lot. Take care, and we'll see you again on Friday.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.